Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you all with us. Before we jump into our conversation about transgender people and incarceration, on the heels of Chelsea Manning going to prison for these 35 years, maybe less, we do give you our day in history. Let me start off by saying that we were at the March on Washington last Saturday. It was a really interesting event, pretty powerful event. We'll play more of our tape from that on Wednesday, which is the 50th anniversary itself on the 28th of August. It was amazing for me as someone who had been there as a 17-year-old civil rights worker and going back 50 years later, a very different day. A lot of families with young kids, parents waiting to see their children witness this day in history. There were a lot of young people in this crowd, many more than I remember from before. People came from all over, thousands of miles away. We met people from Toledo, Ohio. We met people from Chicago, Illinois, people from South Carolina, people coming in as far away as Nevada. There was a real energy and spirit about the place. I wish I had seen more. It was an integrated crowd, mostly African-American. I wish we had seen more white young activists there than were there. But it stood out. It was an event that I'm glad we did not miss. There was a lot of energy there, especially at the end when we ended up in a side march that walked up the White House, actually blocked traffic, stopped traffic, no police around, chanting Trayvon Martin and no justice, no peace. And it was a energized crowd, young and old, white and black and Latino, which was very interesting. It felt good. The one last story I'll say about the march before we jump into our day in history is that as we were walking to dinner to meet friends who had gone to the march as well, we passed a man in the street. He was laying up the side of a building, and he was homeless. Looked up and said something to me, and I didn't hear what he said. And Valerie, my wife, was with me, and she said to me, did you hear what he said? I said, no, what did he say? He said, can I have a sip of your water? Can I have a sip of your water? That just tore me apart. The idea we're living in 21st century America, and there's a man on the corner here in the United States of America, asking for a sip of water on the day we marched in Washington. I turned around, gave him our bottles of water, a little bit more, and we walked on, asking for a sip of water on a summer day. This day in history, August 26th, this is the day that Hale Woodruff founded the Atlanta University in 1900. This is the day in 1906 that Dr. Albert Sabin was born, who is the doctor who gave us the polio vaccine. He refused to make money on it. He did it for the good of society. Well, we've lost something. We gained something from him and lost that perspective on our world. This is the day in 1910 that Mother Teresa was born. This is the day in 1918 that Dr. Katherine G. Johnson was born, who worked at NASA. She was one of the early African-American women to get a PhD in mathematics as an astrophysicist. She's still working and still active. The daughter of a janitor who moved his family to another town so his daughter could go to a better high school. She became what she is today and should be an inspiration to all of us. This is the day that Geraldine Ferraro, the first woman Democratic vice presidential candidate, was born in 1935. This was the day that William Dawson was nominated to become Democratic Party vice presidential candidate. Didn't happen in 1943, but it happened. This is the day that Valerie Simpson Ashford was born. And Branford Marcellus, we should be playing some of his music today. Didn't realize that. Branford Marcellus, jazz saxophonist, was born on this day in 1960. This is a day in the year 580, the Chinese invented toilet paper. We can talk about that on another day. What did folks do before that? I don't know. This was a day in slavery in 1641 when the Portuguese took over parts of Angola to begin the slave trade from Angola. This was a day that the Amistad we've been covering in 1839 was captured off Long Island, the beginning of the Long Amistad trial of the Africans who took over that ship, killed the people on board to free themselves as slaves being brought from Africa. This is the day in 1873 the first free kindergarten was founded. In 1874, on this day, 16 African men were lynched and women were lynched in Tennessee, the beginning of the end of Reconstruction. And on this day, very important day, the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing the women's right to vote, is formally adopted into the United States Constitution. The 19th Amendment today is the day that we should be talking about today. We'll do that on another day coming up. And also on this day in 1932, in the midst of the Depression, 7 million people could not keep up with their mortgage payments. The United States actually put a halt on foreclosures for the first time. It is something we should think about today. This is a day that George Orwell published in 1946, the great book Animal Farm. And this is the day the first black baseball pitcher, Don Bankhead, in 1947, played, and he actually hit a home run on his first at-bat. This is the day that August 26th, the United States finally recognized Women's Equality Day that happened in 1971. And this is the day in 2002 when the United States Congress was told George W. Bush he didn't need to declare war and decided to go in and invade Afghanistan, invade Iraq. This was also the day that we gathered in 1968 in Chicago to protest the Democratic National Convention that led to the trial of Chicago 8 that led to the demonstrations in Chicago. All this happened on this day in history, August the 26th. Let's turn to our guests and our show. We are joined once again by Lauren McNamara, who was called to testify at Chelsea Manning's trial because of online chats she had with then Bradley Manning. She's a marketing writer who lives in Orlando, author of the article The Humanity of Private Manning. Cecilia Chung joins us, senior strategist for the Transgender Law Center, and Monica Stevens, a local trans activist here in Baltimore. And welcome, Lauren, Cecilia, and Monica. Good to have you all with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also email us. You can also get onto our Facebook pages and log on there, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888, to join in on this conversation. Cecilia, let me begin with you, because one of the things that I think struck a lot of people when Bradley Manning was convicted and then said, no longer call me Bradley Manning, I'm Chelsea Manning, and has been very forthright in who he is. You've been very active in terms of what's been going on around the country and changing the nature of prisons and transgender inmates, people who are incarcerated. Talk a little bit about that work, what's going on in L.A. and other places that we don't know about much here.
Well, thank you, Mark. First of all, I think because of Chelsea Manning, it's such a high-profile case that all of a sudden the media is putting a lot of attention to what's going on and how transgender is being treated in the prison systems, and so a lot of other questions comes up, and Los Angeles County has changed their policies on how they house their transgender men and women in custodies since 2012, and the policies was adopted around April last year. This is in response to, of course, a series of complaints, and so because of that, they actually had formed a committee made up of police rank and files, and also with work with the mayor's office and also community members. And it took them about over a year to hear from the community and work on the policies. And they actually created policies to house transgender men and women in custody separate from the general populations. And they created three-page policies on how to provide strip search, how to address transgender people and shower, and how to treat them while they are in custodies, and so on and so forth. And it didn't come overnight, and this is a very community-driven process. And it's very unusual that, that we actually have this kind of like policy in place. But this is not a unique situation. And because since 2003, President George W. Bush had signed into law the Prison Rape Elimination Act that requires, all federal and state prisons to really adopt policies to make prisons and detention safer for vulnerable populations, such as LGBT prisoners.
So I kind of want to probe this a bit further, too. Lauren and Monica, one of the things I thought about as soon as the conviction took place with Private Manning, and she said, "I'm now Chelsea Manning," was a number of things. Because during the trial, and Lauren, you've talked about this when we were on the air before, a couple of times before, the Manning's gender became almost a sense of his weakness. Do you know what I'm saying? That was the public portrayal. But I wonder now what impetus this will give for America to begin thinking about things in a different way. I said to my producers before we got on the air, I think most of America, when they hear the word trans, they have very different images in their head. They either have an image of a man who's a transvestite, or they have an image of a woman who wants to look like a man. But they don't have the sense of what trans means as a different gender, as a different way of living, as a different way of being, is something that is not in the American consciousness yet. Lauren?
I would say that this is an excellent opportunity for us to take hold of this conversation and use it to start shifting the narrative on this and start increasing people's, you know, the public's understanding of what it means to be trans. Because you're right. In my dealings with this, I've found that from the angle most people approach this, most people largely have no idea what it means to be trans in a practical and everyday sense. And I can see why, because in the everyday, this is something they're more likely to see on Jerry Springer or The Maury Show, or they think it's that thing from Silence of the Lambs. And when that's the only understanding that people have, you know, as their basis for what trans people are like, then naturally it's going to seem like something bizarre, something just very abstract, something almost unreal and something worth mocking. Now, instead, if they were able to see that this is simply a medical condition that can be treated and we're just people who go on with our lives without it being a big deal, then they just might be more willing to understand that this is something we need, it's part of who we are. It shouldn't be some controversial thing. It shouldn't be an item of ridicule.
And Monica, I'd like you to jump in on that as well.
Well, I was listening because I always like to find out where a conversation is going and like to hear what people's takes are. And I guess for me, I have a different take on this whole thing because I'm a bit older. And so I guess I've been around a little bit longer. I remember this conversation from the Donahue Show from about 1980 to 1981, so it's not like this conversation has just started. And I remember Donahue attempting to start conversations around transgender and issues in maybe 1980 or 1981. My take on the difficulty with our community partly is because this is what I believe. We don't explain it very well. That's one of the number one issues with us trying to help others understand who we are. We don't do a very good job of explaining who we are ourselves. You know, I agree that Chelsea Manning being in the spotlight does help. But on a national level, that's fine. On a local level, it doesn't do very much. I guarantee you, mistreatment of transgender women in the Baltimore City Detention Center is not going to change very much because of what happens with Chelsea Manning. It just isn't. Because unless he's planning to come here, give a lecture to the Baltimore City Police Department and the Maryland Department of Corrections, and she's going to do some sensitivity training, it's not going to do much here. And on a local level, I don't think national, sensational media does very much, because this is a republic. So we're made up of small state and local governments within a larger government. So what happens on a national level is good, but really when you think about change happens on a smaller level. It's macro and micro. That's my take on it.
So when we see changes happening in the D.C. system slowly, in the D.C. and L.A. system slowly, Because they're only actually changing things in detention centers, which is much like Baltimore City Jail. And once you get into the larger population, So I wonder what goes next. I mean, because you still have this feeling that somebody just tweeted, Kathy just tweeted in, trans women on trans women prisoners. Cecilia, our tweet just said, trans women prisoners, it's not the answer to house trans women with women. How would you respond to that, Cecilia?
So I think that, you know, like for some people, that's where a lot of conversations need to happen. Trans women need to be housed in a safe environment, just like women need to be housed in a safe environment as well. So, and I think that the immediate gut reaction for some people is that trans women should not be housed with women. And for whatever reason, for maybe it's because, you know, there's a lack of understanding of, you know, like what it means to be housed in a safe environment. But we also know that with the Bureau of Justice Statistics, LGBT inmates are 12.2% more likely to be sexually and physically assaulted by others, inmate or staff. And so it's really important for us to keep that perspective in mind. And, you know, and according to a study done by UC Irvine, transgender inmates that respond to surveyed, over 53% of them had reported being physically or sexually assaulted. So in terms of vulnerability, this is not just about, you know, like housing for transgender. This is really about how to prevent gender violence happen to these inmates. So that's that issue alone, I think that a lot of women can resonate. And I think that if we go back to Monica's point, you know, and she's right, you know, right now all the attention, you know, like it has a very national platform. It's because of Chelsea Manning being a very high profile figure. But when this goes away, the work needs to be done, you know, on the grassroots level. And, you know, the work that we're doing right now would not go away. So, and organizations that I'm on the board of that's called Just Detention International, we're working very closely with a lot of different grassroots organizations and community and trying to, like, look at different ways to create policies as well as, you know, helping to adopt state legislations, and that way we can help to change local jurisdictions for like police in custodies as well as local county jails for them to adopt similar policies like the Prison Rape Elimination Act that govern state and federal prison. Until then, you know, there's a lot of work ahead of us.
Now, I wonder how we went with a couple of questions I'm going to get here before we leave. And there's also an email here from a trans person in Montana I want to try to get to before we're done as well. And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888, write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. I wonder if specifically we can talk about how, and maybe Monica, you can lead off on this if you want to for a moment, then we'll move to the other subject, which is how trans people of color are really – in the world we're in, disproportionately affected by police and prisons. You see that here a lot in Baltimore. You see it in D.C. You see it in many cities.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, when you talk about stigma on every level, and you talk about being dehumanized on every level, and you talk about the Jerry Springers, you know, it's so unfortunate, and it's so difficult for us to present who we are, when you look at the examples of how we're portrayed. It's, you know, I was in a conversation with local police a couple months ago here, and a woman I know who works doing outreach, was getting off of work, and she does outreach, obviously, at night. And she was getting off of work, and she got harassed by the police. And the police said, well, we thought you were out prostituting. And she said, well, why did you think I was prostituting? And they said, well. The answer was well. You know, and really, that speaks volume. You know, it's because you're transgender and you're a person of color and you were out late at night. Now, you know, on so many levels, that's wrong and it's got to be unconstitutional and it's got to be so much discrimination connected with it. Mm-hmm. But it's born out of what is portrayed about us. You know, and I had to explain to the officer that's not enough to, you know, to pigeonhole us into, like, anything. You know, so, we've got to lead the conversation. And that's what I meant by we don't explain who we are well enough. You know, we've got to lead the conversation. You know, and we've got to have better portrayals of who we are. Because what they don't know is some of us are college professors, some of us are doctors, but we don't see that portrayed anywhere. They got to see us in every manifestation of who we are. And we've got to be forward with that.
So, and I agree. And I think that there's some shocking stats here that I'm going to give them before we go to break here. And we'll come back. We'll go on this one a few more minutes with you all, because there's a couple of things we do want to cover before you all before you have to go. What we're reading in this one article was that in 38 states, gender identity alone is a legal basis for firing an employee.
Mm-hmm. It is.
38 states. And that one in four, in this kind of, it was a Washington, D.C. transgender needs assessment study that was done that found that only 58% of people had jobs because people could not get jobs, and that 41% of all African American and 21% of all Latino respondents to the study said they were in prison simply because they presented their gender.
And Mark, I bet you there's no stat to find out how many of those same people got fired because the person that fired them was having sex with them on the fly. I bet there's no stat.
That exactly. I mean, that's something people do not want to deal with at all. To add that layer to it. Let me read this other piece that came in. After take a quick break. We'll come back. Can you all stay another 5 minutes or so after break before we move to our next subject? Good. So we'll be right back and come back right to Lauren McNamara and continue with Cecilia Chang and Monica Stevens. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're here with Cecilia Chung, Senior Strategist at the Transgender Law Center, Monica Stevens, a local trans activist, Lauren McNamara, who testified at the Chelsea Manning trial because of online chat she had with then Bradley Manning, marketing writer, as well as the author of the article, The Humanity of Private Manning, 410-319-8888. And as we round out this segment, Lauren, and we're talking about how far we have to go and what you think are kind of steps that have to be taken. You know, it even takes place in our local news. When National Public Radio, the managing editor of their standards and practice, Tu Seidel, said that they would not refer to Chelsea Manning as Chelsea Manning, but only as Bradley Manning and as him, and then kind of had to back down and would push back to change that ruling. I mean, that's what I mean by kind of creating conversation that was not taking place before in a serious way, I think.
Well, as Monica said, this is just one moment. This is not the single pivotal end of things and everything is solved after this. This is just one step among many. This isn't all going to be fixed in 10 years. This isn't all going to be fixed in 20 years. What we have to do is keep the conversation active. There will be more high-profile events like this, and even when there aren't, just in everyday life, this is something to focus on as ways that need to be fixed when the media refers to trans people. And as you said, with NPR, after facing a lot of pressure about this, they were shown that it is actually necessary to respect her name and her gender, and that being trans is no excuse for them to disregard this. And in large part, it's our mission to make an environment where it's publicly unacceptable to openly disrespect our genders and our identities and our names like that. And the more we do that, then hopefully the less we'll see of this misgendering in the media, of these just salacious articles that are done for attention rather than respectfully. And hopefully the more widespread the attitude will become that as trans people are respectable like anyone else, that they should be treated with respect, treated appropriately in prisons, treated appropriately by police. And as Monica said, with the police automatically assuming that trans women must be sex workers, police departments, when they've addressed this, they've now had to offer explicit guidance telling their officers, do not assume that trans people are sex workers. And just think, what sort of mindset must be so prevalent that they have to be told explicitly not to assume that every single one of us must be sex workers? How did that attitude become so prevalent? That is obviously a problem that needs to be fixed just in terms of changing minds in an everyday sense. And this is a national thing, a state thing, a local thing, and it's something we're going to have to work on constantly moving forward. It's not something we can let up on after this passes.
So there was something I was going to read here, but I think we have to move on to our next segment. We have our other guests here arrived, and we should probably move into that segment with young people who have come to the studio. But Troy Lynx, who's an identity and wellness coach, wrote a very interesting piece in about why she opposes gender reassignment surgery being paid for by the government in prison. But that's a whole subject, I think, that, and she looks at it in a very spiritual way in terms of people becoming comfortable with their, one who, as she wrote, one who is female yet male yet a female, and the kind of spiritual world that means that they have to come in touch with, and that surgery doesn't answer it. But I think that rather than getting that today, though I really want to read this and create a conversation, I think this would be a conversation unto itself for another day, because we could spend another hour on that alone. So I do want to thank our three guests. Unless either of you want to have a closing thought before we take off to our next guests. Cecilia, Monica?
Yes, I think that's to really going back to a question about transgender people of color being in the prison systems. I think that, you know, we really need to really go back to look at a lot of issues such as gender, race, and class, in addition to profiling and what created that kind of environment, you know, like, I think it's really good that we are coinciding with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. You know, like, we can say that lots of things have changed and a lot of things hasn't changed. And we have to really look at, you know, like, transgender people of color being minorities of the minorities. And it's not just about gender, our gender identity being, you know, like, something that people have very little understandings on with. And also how we look at gender and, you know, like, and how we understand gender is something people still need to understand. And how we look at race is something that I think people still feel very uncomfortable to talk about. So until we can have a really good, honest conversations, I think there's still a lot of work to do.
A closing thought, Monica, before we have to go?
I was also a teenager during the March on Washington, and my parents went to the march, and they had me stay home because they were afraid that it might be violent. When I got the text, I just wanted to identify as a local activist because I've been in all kinds of activists. I was an anti-Vietnam War activist. I was an equality activist. I'm just an activist.
Okay.
And so, you know, trans is just what my reality is in this life. And so as far as my spiritual identity goes, I was created to be on this life to be an activist. You know, and so that's what I believe my spiritual path is. Trans is just what my experience is. That's just how I share this body. You know, I just think that this is really prophetic as far as what Dr. King's message was, and his message was, for me, if we don't open our hearts and minds, then we're just going to keep repeating the same cycle over and over and over. And this is just showing that we're repeating the same cycle over and over and over. You know, we keep looking on the outside, and everybody on this earth knows that we're made up of what's on us in the inside. you know, we keep reading, don't judge a book by its cover, and love me for the inside, not the outside. And people keep making the same mistakes over and over. And until we get by making that same mistake over and over, we're going to have to keep learning this lesson over and over.
My takeaway. Monica, thank you. Let me just close with thought. Jackie wrote in, let me leave this thought so we can pick up on this conversation next, which I think is important to do. Both the email I was going to read, and let me read this email, and we'll pick up this conversation next few weeks on trans issues in our society. Jackie writes in, I'm joining the show late, but I wanted to be sure that folks know that as of last month, transsexual women, detainees of the Baltimore City Detention Center, even after identifying themselves and obviously being trans, are put in general population with male detainees. Imagine how dangerous this is and what people need to do to survive in the Baltimore City Detention Center. So we'll pick up on that conversation in the next couple of weeks, because I think we need to, on a local level, deal with that, and a larger spiritual and life level, deal with the email that that I was going to read. But did not read, so in whole. So let me thank all three of you. Monica Stevens, I look forward to meeting you here in Baltimore. Cecilia Chung and Lauren McNamara, thank you both for being on the show again. And Lauren, you're becoming like a regular. We're enjoying this. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll all be talking very soon. Thank you so much for all you do. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we are going to meet Babatunde Salam, an advocacy leader with New Lens Productions, a finalist for the Peace First Prize, and Megan Sherman, production leader at New Lens, as we look at this project, Young People and the Police in Our City. It's very interesting. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go away.